This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's talk about this whole Iran thing. Let's talk about foreign policy in general. Let's talk about immigration policy. Did it change? Lee Smith shows up with some opinions. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, before we get to foreign policy with all this Israel-Iran stuff and a little prediction I'm going to make and all that, we have to do something we hate to do, but something we believe in on this show. We honor yet another fallen service member, especially those who died during training. They are the forgotten heroes. They died serving their country, no different than somebody charging a machine gun nest in war. And a Dustin K. Wright, a pilot, an Army pilot. He was with the 101st Combat Aviation Brigade. He died during a training mission. He died for his country, gave up his life for his country. It is dangerous to serve in the military. It's dangerous to fly a helicopter. Helicopters have problems. Helicopters fall out of the sky and kill people who are in them. He signed up to serve his country, and he gave his life for our country, and he deserves our unending respect. All right? All right, now let's talk about Israel and Iran and America and all the stuff that's happening right now. Before we get into Donald Trump and Tulsi Gabbard and my prediction and where we're going, the main reason I want to talk to you tonight is not to give you the latest update on the bombings and the Tel Aviv and America, but I'm not doing that. The reason I wanted to talk to you about this is, first, foreign policy is not simple. And you should beware of anybody, and yourself included, because I'm tempted to do it too, we're all human, beware of anybody simplifying something that is complicated. People love to do this with foreign policy, with historical foreign policy, with current foreign policy, with future foreign policy. This is good. This is bad. They good. They bad. He good. He bad. You see it all the time. The people will take incredibly complicated affairs with different players on every side, different motivations, and they'll... Civil War is actually a perfect example. Americans are taught about the Civil War. North good, South bad. That is the extent of American knowledge about an ongoing, horrible civil war of carnage with 600,000 dead, angels and demons on every side, different motivations, moving parts everywhere, all simplified down to North good, South bad. That's how people handle things. That's how people handle wars, conflicts, really most things. But foreign policy is not simple. It is never simple. It's never clear what is right, what is wrong. So if you are sitting here watching me right now and you have a strong opinion about Israel, Iran, that is fine. That is fine. I get that. One way or the other. Don't care. Have a strong opinion. That's fine. But remember, it's not simple, okay? If you're sitting here right now and you don't know what to believe, I kind of like this. I don't like Iran. I don't want them to have a nuke, but I am kind of nervous about it. That's totally fine. If you're sitting there, I'll tell you right now, because I don't want to be mealy-mouthed about the whole thing, that's really where I'm at. I'm in a watch-and-wait mode. I'm very apprehensive after 20 years of failed GWAT failure. I also don't want Iran to have a nuclear weapon. I'm very apprehensive of where all this might go. I'm watching. I'm waiting. Wherever you are is fine, but what you shouldn't do is simplify it. It's not simple. It's complicated. different motivations. Look, think about America alone. We won't even get into all the other countries. Just America alone. Do we have competing interests in this country? Competing ideas? Foreign, domestic ideas? We do have a little bit of that, wouldn't you say? That's just our country. Now fit all those competing ideas, competing interests with Israel. Competing ideas, competing interests, different motivations. Oh, but let's loop in Iran. Competing interests, competing ideas. Is China involved? China buys 20% of their oil from Iran. Are they involved? What about Russia? It's complicated. There are a lot of players. But let's discuss where we are, because Donald Trump has gone to social media, and that's where foreign policy is done now, right in front of our eyes, which is kind of cool. He said Tehran needs to be evacuated. He came out and called for unconditional surrender today. Also gave a not-so-subtle reference to the fact that he knows where the big cheese is. He knows where the Ayatollah is, and we can kill him anytime we want. Not saying we will, but we might. And that brings us to this. Trump is... he's not what people pretend he is. On both sides. And here's what I mean. There are people on both sides who believe that Donald Trump is this ultimate strong man that will bring back America's strength, smash all of her enemies. There are people who believe that. There are people also on both sides who believe that Donald Trump is a complete dove when it comes to foreign policy, totally hands off, just wants to take care of America and get some of those steel factories back up to work again. He's not really either of those things. He's a mixture, I would say, of both of those things. But again, we like to make things simple. He's a dove. He's a hawk. Here's what he said about this before.
What specifically is better than a ceasefire? What are you looking for here? Real end, not a ceasefire, an end. So something that would be permanent.
Yeah.
Or giving up entirely. Is that okay too? Are you closer? Are you possible? Is that possible in the next 24 hours?
Why not? Certainly possible. Complete give up. That's possible.
All right. So here's how he clearly stands now. When you call for unconditional surrender, I know the audio was a little rough there because he was on a plane, but when he's talking about not a ceasefire, an end, a complete give up, in his own words, that's what he said. When you take that stance, whatever you believe about it, right or wrong, when you take that stance, then you have guaranteed it's about to get hot. Because if you're the Ayatollah, you don't have any choices, right? You give up all your power, you give up your country, undoubtedly you face a war crimes trial, or you fight. So if that's the stance you've taken, that means you're going to war. That brings me to, you know, how we were talking about there are different factions in America, different competing factions, even on our side. That brings me to Tulsi Gabbard. Tulsi Gabbard is the DNI, Director of National Intelligence. There was a meeting at Camp David. They convened all the heads of the family, if you will, for, that's a Godfather reference. Tulsi Gabbard wasn't invited. DNI wasn't invited. And then Trump said, well, this was yesterday, Trump said this publicly about Tulsi, because Tulsi just 3 months ago had testified in front of Congress that Iran's not making a nuclear weapon. Here's what Trump said about that.
You've always said that you don't believe Iran should be able to have a nuclear weapon, but how close do you personally think that they were to getting one? Because Tulsi Gabbard testified in March that the intelligence community said Iran wasn't building a nuclear weapon.
I don't care what she said. I think they were very close to having
it. I don't care what she said. All right, so I don't care whose side you're on, the whole Trump versus Tulsi thing, but I want you to watch one more little video. This was two weeks ago, Tulsi Gabbard went online and she put out, it was long, this is a briefer version of it. It was 3 minutes long, the original version, but she put out this video, really opposing war, nuclear war. Here she was.
I recently visited Hiroshima in Japan and stood at the epicenter of a city that remains scarred by the unimaginable horror caused by a single nuclear bomb dropped in 1945, 80 years ago. Because as we stand here today, closer to the brink of nuclear annihilation than ever before, political elite and warmongers are carelessly fomenting fear and tensions between nuclear powers. Perhaps it's because they are confident that they will have access to nuclear shelters for themselves and for their families that regular people won't have access to. So it's up to us, the people, to speak up and demand an end to this madness. We must reject this path to nuclear war and work toward a world where no one has to live in fear of a nuclear holocaust.
Does that sound like somebody who's going to be thrilled that we have carrier groups sailing towards Iran and the president publicly announcing that we're about to kill the Ayatollah? So here's the little prediction. Tulsi Gabbard will not be DNI for very much longer. When the president comes out and says, I don't care what you say, when you don't get the invite to the head party at Camp David, when you are obviously going to be upset about this current direction, maybe she quits, maybe she gets fired, maybe she resigns, you know, to go pursue a family. They love to do that whole thing. I don't know exactly what the details will be. We're going to have a new DNI very soon. Either way, the point of all this is watch. Don't simplify anything. Watch. Take in information. There will be lies spreading all over from every side, as there are in every war. We have to be discerning people to sift through the madness. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. I love sleeping. I'm a huge sleeping fan. And maybe right now, maybe you're spending a whole lot of time doom scrolling on social media at night. Oh my gosh, war and everything. You still need to sleep. Put the phone down and go pick up a cup of hot chocolate. Dream powder hot chocolate from Beam. It's not just because it's delicious, which of course it is. It's because it has a bunch of natural things in it that are going to have you sleeping like a baby and waking up, taking off like a rocket ship. Because it's natural things, reishi and all this stuff. You want that? I sleep like a baby every night, 8-9 hours, and wake up feeling good, not groggy. That's what Dream Powder from Beam can give to you. You want a huge discount? Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. I like cinnamon chocolate, but they have a bunch of flavors. Go, get some. Sift through information, like we talked about. Go to people you trust and figure out what's real, what's not real, especially during war. We're always surrounded by lies. In this era and every other era, when it comes to war, what is real and what is not is hard to figure out. So get information from people you trust. I trust guys like Lee Smith, always have. You know Lee comes on this show as often as we can get our hands on him. Best-selling author Lee Smith joins me now to give us a little bit of background so we can bone up on what we're dealing with here. Okay, Lee, let's rewind before we get into anything today. Iran's nuclear program, how did they start it? Why did they start it? Why has it accelerated? Give us some background on it.
Well, I mean, you know, actually the Iranian nuclear program probably goes back to sometime in the 70s. It predates the Islamic Revolution. One of the reasons that the Islamic Republic has wanted the nuclear weapons program is to be able to push the United States out of the Middle East. It's very important to understand that for all the talk you've heard, oh, the Iranians are rivals with Israel or Saudi Arabia. No, that's not true. That's not how they've ever seen it. They see the United States as the power in the Middle East, in the Persian Gulf, as it has been since 1944. Because at that point, the United States made a deal with Saudi Arabia saying, in exchange for you making sure cheap oil, you keep pumping out cheap oil to keep the world economy going and to make sure that America is sitting on top of the world, we will protect that oil. And we've seen different times when the United States has had to protect that oil. For instance, in 1991, 1992, against Saddam Hussein's forces when they invaded Kuwait. So the Iranians have always had their eye on us, pushing us out of the region. The other people they're threatening, of course, are American allies like Israel, like Saudi Arabia, like the United Arab Emirates. But again, we are the main target. The reason there's a lot of question, people have said, well, okay, we've been hearing about this for decades. What's going on now? What's the urgency now? Well, the urgency now is that after Donald Trump, during his first term, withdrew from Barack Obama's nuclear deal, the Joe Biden administration, while they were not able to re-enter the nuclear deal as much as they wanted to, nonetheless, they made available to the Iranians many, many billions of dollars. And when we're talking about the money that the Iranians put into their war chest, it goes in some cases for terror outfits, for terror proxies like Hamas, like Hezbollah, but it also goes into their nuclear weapons program. So people want to know, like, wow, how did this happen all of a sudden out of the blue? Why is Donald Trump really alarmed about this right now? Well, again, remember, Donald Trump has been talking about how Iran can't have a bomb. He's been talking about this actually even before he started running in 2015. So he's been pretty consistent on this. But the reason it's urgent now, again, is the reason that people are very concerned and how this happened is because the Biden administration wasn't looking, right? When Donald Trump, during his first term, maximum pressure meant cutting off Iran's money, meant putting pressure on Iran in lots of different ways, whether it was intelligence services, whether it was a different kind of military action. Let's remember, he killed the IRGC's head, Qasem Soleimani. So for Trump, the maximum pressure campaign, right, the Iranian nuclear weapons program was still a big deal, but Donald Trump had them on their back heels. What Joe Biden did was, when he came in, he relaxed the U.S. posture, not just talking about military, talking about every particular way, especially financially. So that's what's happening right now. That's how the Iranians have made this mad rush. And that's why Donald Trump, the White House, and also our allies throughout the region, most especially, of course, Israel, are very concerned right now. So in short, that's kind of a abridged history from the beginning to the present.
No, I appreciate you abridging it as much as you did. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit more on why the soft stance, if we have to put it that way, from, of course, Barack Obama, which you already pointed out, and then the Biden administration? What's with the soft heart for Iran? What's the Democrat goal for Iran?
I don't know. I mean, there are foreign policy goals and there are domestic policy goals. How about if I leave it at this and I try to pay as much respect to both Barack Obama and Joe Biden as possible? And that's to say, they had an academic view. I won't go much further. They had an academic view of the world, and their academic view of the world has to do with balance of power. Now, Jesse, if you and I were sitting and having a beer with most of your audience, if we were talking about balance of power, what we'd be talking about is like, okay, I'm going to go make sure that my two adversaries are at each other's throats, because that's good for me. That'll advantage me. That's not how these guys see it. That's not how Obama saw it. It's not how Henry Kissinger saw it too, which we can talk about at some other time. Their idea was to bring everyone into a balance of power, meant by definition hobbling the United States. That was the purpose, right? People perceive the United States, and it's shocking for Americans that American administration saw the United States as the grand provocateur throughout the Middle East. But that's what Barack Obama did. And that's why, by legalizing the Iranian nuclear weapons program, the idea was there would be some sort of grand deterrent scheme throughout the region. The United States is a nuclear power, of course, but if Iran was too, and of course Israel is a nuclear power, but to set up this system of deterrence that would keep the peace in this insanely volatile region. So that was the overly academic theory that I think is fair to say. I have other theories as well about what, especially what Barack Obama was doing, but absolutely, this is what was going on with Obama and the Obama White House.
Wow, I mean, it's not freaking secret. Barack Obama hated Jews. He was raised by people
okay.
who hated
All
Jews.
Right. So I'm sure.
I mean, look, we don't have to mince words about the whole thing.
I just thought I would give the academic explanation as well.
Yeah. That. Well, you know what a soft touch I have on things, Lee. Yeah, I mean, right. I remember like it was yesterday when they asked Reverend Wright if he met with Obama after he was elected. The first thing out of his mouth was he said, them Jews aren't going to let me talk to him. I mean, that's what influenced the guy's worldview. So. Right. So, yeah. Okay, so let's focus on the actual military aspect of this, Lee, because at least for right now, I'm old enough to know not to ever count my chickens on anything. At least for right now, it looks like Israel beat the living crap out of them in at least the opening salvo, taking out all these leaders, things like that. Now, Iran is not America, they're not France, they're not Israel militarily, but they're also not nothing. But they've been made to look like nothing so far. What do you make of that?
Well, I mean, the big Iranian threat has always been the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, especially its Quds Force, which is its expeditionary terror unit. And these are the guys who not only go around the Middle East, like to, you know, these are the guys who built Hezbollah, and these are the guys who were working with Assad's forces in Syria. It's very important to understand the Iranians really don't have a regular military. Most of their fighting is done by Arabs around the region. What the IRGC does is it's basically a consultancy firm. It's like McKinsey. They go around the Middle East and they show other people how to fight and direct them and tell them what to do. That's what the IRGC is for the most part. It's not very large. It's also large. It's a business enterprise inside of Iran. The other thing the IRGC does is, and this is important and it's something worth talking about, and some people have talked about it, though I don't particularly like the way they've talked about it. But they have cultivated terror forces around the world. So insofar as the Americans should be concerned, and insofar as our domestic services should be on high alert, and I'm sure FBI Director Kash Patel and Kristi Noem at DHS, they are all concerned about this, and they're all following. I mean, I have no particular insight. I'm just imagining that they're on alert and they're following whatever leads they may have if there are different Iranian terror proxies operating here in the United States. And Jesse, this is one of the shameful things about what Joe Biden did when he left our borders open. The number of the number of foreigners who are here to cause trouble, not just to do terrible things like get behind a car and drive it drunk and kill Americans, right? But kill Americans inadvertently, but people who have been sent here to actually kill Americans. So this is what I think. This is what I think we should be focusing on. And again, I'm sure this is in the White House. I'm sure Seb Gorka is looking at this. And it's a very big deal. So that's the biggest concern, I think, for the United States right now. If that makes sense. There's lots of other stuff happening around the region. And, you know, there's lots of stuff that will be happening inside Iran, I'm sure, for a while to come.
Yeah. I guess I'm going to have to cancel my vacation. All right, Lee, before I let you go, speaking of Kash Patel, I've got to ask you about this. Chinese made driver's license to sway the 2020 election. What is this about?
Yeah, this is a very important story. That when I first saw that reported last night, I think John Solomon at Just the News broke the story. Really important piece. And the core of the story is about Chinese election interference. I mean, in an insanely perverse way as well. Driver's licenses, you know, to get people to be able to register to vote. You may remember that I believe the date was January 5th, 2021. The then Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe, who's now CIA Director, Ratcliffe issued a memo. Who's talking to an intelligence community ombudsman who was pointing out that there were big problems at the CIA, because CIA analysts, some of them wanted to say what the Chinese were up to, and they were blocked by CIA management. And unfortunately, that suggests that perhaps the former CIA director, Gina Haspel, may have been involved in pressuring analysts not to reveal what the Chinese were doing. But there were other guys who were there, other guys at the agency were saying stuff like, yeah, I don't like Trump's policies, so I'm not going to put this correct analysis through there. I see what the Chinese are doing, but I don't like Donald Trump's policy on China. So I'm not gonna write that analysis or document what I know to be the case. So it's very upsetting. So anyway, Kash Patel, Director Patel, has found apparently lots of this intelligence, and they've passed it on now to Senator Chuck Grassley. So yeah, it's a big story and a very big deal.
What was it they said? The most secure, freest, fairest election ever. As soon as I heard those words repeated over and over and over again, Lee, I knew something was amiss.
You Lee took Smith. It to the bank, right. Yeah.
Thank you, brother. All right. Let's talk immigration policy. Is ours changing? Are we softening on deportations? We'll talk to Victor Avila about that in a moment. Before we talk to Victor, let me talk to you about your mind, about your energy. Let me ask you, when the afternoon comes, 3-4 in the afternoon, is it nap time for you? You're staring at the clock at work. Oh, man, I just want to go lay down. You know, a male vitality stack or a female vitality stack from Chalk, we'll take that away. You're going to go all day long with energy at the end of the day to make dinner, hang with the fam. You are natural herbal supplements away from feeling 10 years younger. Try it for 90 days. I personally take a male vitality stack every single day. Wouldn't tell you if I wouldn't take it. Over 3 years I've been on every single day. Oh my gosh, I feel good. Want to feel like that? Chuck.com/JesseTV gets you a big fat discount. We'll be back. Okay, let's get an update on deportations, because the Trump administration, frankly, has been awesome so far. They're even going into the heart of enemy territory, places like Los Angeles, where these scumbags tend to congregate, and they're rooting them out. Now, came out last week, and he indicated publicly that he's going to back off with, you know, farms and hotel workers. But then today we find out they're reversing that, too. I don't know what the truth is with all this right now. I bet Victor does. Joining me now, Victor Avila, retired ICE agent. Victor, it's been doing my heart well to see ICE out there rounding up the scum in this country. Where's the Trump administration with all this right now?
I got to tell you the reality. I'm going to tell you the truth. There is some turmoil. I don't want to use that word really, but there is some confusion of the mission between the president's office and ICE and the leadership all the way down to the field agent. Exactly because of what you just said. President Trump says one thing, and then the ICE department is saying something else. It causes a lot of confusion, and it causes a lot of issues down to the field level as to who they go approach and pick up. Now, when we talk about the criminal illegal aliens, I don't think anybody has a problem. The left's going to have a problem with anybody, but I think the common American wants that criminal illegal alien gone. And we are targeting, we have millions of those, by the way, that we could target that are only known gotaways that came in the last 4 years and that have actually deportation orders already issued to them. So there's plenty of work to go pick up those categories. Yes, they're encountering what they call the collaterals, the ones that don't have any criminal history, and they're going to go too because that discretion doesn't exist anymore. Now, when you talk about the agricultural workers and the hotel industry workers and all that, that is something that is up for discussion if you really wanted to talk about that, and let's have the discussion. But I think we have to be very clear as to what to do and what they're not to doing, because the confusion doesn't help either way when it comes to the mission.
Okay, so I'm going to ask the lamest question in the world in the lamest way, but I think you'll get what I'm saying. I'm confused why there's confusion, meaning the Trump administration has been pretty clear-eyed about this whole thing. Is it the social media posts? Are they giving two different sets of orders? Because that's not fair to the ICE guys. Why are the ICE guys confused?
I think it has to do with some of the people that are in some of these positions, higher up positions within the agency of DHS and ICE, that might not be on the same page here. And that's concerning. And so they are undermining the orders of the President of the United States. And they think that they could then give their orders to their own people. And of course, you know, you as an agent, you listen to your supervisor and your supervisor's supervisor, and here we go, the old chain of command, right? And I think that needs to be up and has to be very, very clear. And I think it has to do with starting from the top.
Yeah. All right, let's switch gears here, focus on these quacky blue states like New York. We have New York's AG Letitia James publicly saying that she's going to be going after New Yorkers, cops who try to help ICE. What is with all this garbage?
It is garbage, and just like the New York comptroller that just got arrested for impeding and obstructing ICE. I gotta tell you, it upsets me when they keep on spreading lies. And the one that they spread is that for some reason, they think that an ICE agent has to show some kind of a judicial warrant. I'm here to tell you, as a retired special agent with Homeland Security Investigations under ICE, that they need absolutely no warrant whatsoever. I, in my career, arrested many, many people without any warrant. As a matter of fact, most of the arrests that I conducted in my career, there was no warrant involved. This is a myth that the left and the media has started pushing out, especially to the illegal alien community, saying that they have to show you some kind of warrant. That is not true. The other thing that this elected official is yelling out, that that ICE agents don't have the authority to arrest U.S. citizens. Are you kidding me? I don't know where they get this information from, but an ICE agent, a federal agent, is the same as a police officer, is the same as a sheriff. They have certain rights under certain authority under certain jurisdictions, and yes, it involves U.S. citizens. Again, I will tell you, I arrested and jailed many U.S. citizens throughout my career. And I wanted to make that clear, because for some reason, when we attach immigration to this discussion, you don't hear that about the local police when they pull over somebody for DUI or somebody for a robbery, or even when you talk about FBI. But as soon as you talk about immigration officials, for some reason, they don't get the authority that they deserve, or the attention that they deserve, that they do have behind the law. And it's very discerning to me, because they, like Letitia James and others, are going to end up finding themselves in handcuffs for continuing to obstruct this process. And Tom Homan has made it very clear that you're not above the law, taking their own words out of their mouths, and you are going to find yourself in custody and be prosecuted for this.
Lord willing, I can't wait to see some Democrats arrested. Thank you, Victor. I appreciate it. Come back soon. Liz Wheeler. She's going to join us, talk about all the street riot insanity and who's funding it. Next. Feels like the street animals are restless, if you will. We just saw the stupid No Kings protests, but as we've discussed many, many times before on the show, 99% of the riots you've seen in your life, every time the animals take to the streets, it's paid for and organized. It's not organic. It's not normal people like you with lives, families, sitting at home, getting outraged and busting out the poster board for some stupid sign. This is all the Democrat communist network in this country, which is funded, organized, and you're seeing a lot of it now. Question is why. Joining me now, Liz Wheeler, host of the wonderful Liz Wheeler Show. Okay, Liz, they dropped $2.1 billion with the B on the No Kings protest, and it just didn't pop off. Why?
No, it didn't. In fact, I unintentionally drove through a No Kings protest just on my way to do what normal people do on the weekend, which is visiting family. And I passed by a luxury white Mercedes. I'm talking like a new model, chrome. The driver has his arm hanging out the window with a poster board sign that says, "Democracy is under assault." And my husband's driving the car and he's like, "Yeah, bro, Pol Pot's really coming for you in your spiffy white luxury Mercedes." The left, I mean, obviously hilarious. I was shrieking with laughter because this is who the left is, right? They recruit these gullible, wealthy, boomer liberals to come out to their protests who are not harmed by leftist policies on one hand. And then on the other hand, they recruit these radical, revolutionary Marxists to stage these violent riots, the so-called anti-ICE riots. Not really about anti-ICE. It's really about being pro-illegal alien out in LA and New York. And of course, you're right. None of this is real. None of it's grassroots. None of it's organic. It's all not only organized and coordinated by certain groups, but it is paid for by people who hate you and who hate America.
You have been doing a lot of digging on this. Whenever Liz Wheeler gets on something, she normally gets to the bottom of it. What have you found?
Yes, there will be a congressional investigation soon, in fact, because some of the groups behind the violent anti-ICE riots, I mean, some of the groups are the Party of Socialism and Liberation. It's an openly communist group that's splintered off from a larger communist group here in the United States. Maybe you've never heard of them. Maybe you're just hearing about them now. They're one of the groups that coordinated a lot of these anti-ICE, these violent riots, and they're funded. This group is funded by a man, an almost billionaire. He's not quite a billionaire, although I think he styles himself as one, by the name of Neville Roy Singham. It's a name that a lot of us on the right are not super familiar with. We're a lot more familiar with names like George Soros. But I would argue, and I know this is a pretty big claim to make, I would argue that Roy Singham is more influential right now than George Soros because he is, believe it or not, more revolutionary than George Soros. George Soros, of course, is pro-open borders. But Roy Singham is an avowed Marxist and communist who's actually hiding out in China. He lives in Shanghai, China, even though he's an American citizen. And if you live in China, you have to do so with special permission of the CCP. He shares an office with a Chinese communist propaganda firm, and not just shares an office building. I mean, literally shares an office. He's been seen at Chinese propaganda conferences writing in a red notebook with a hammer and a sickle on him. He is like as communist as you can be as an American capitalist who made almost $1 billion selling his tech company. He's the one funding the Party for Socialism and Liberation who's staging these riots. He also, this seems at first like a weird connection until you understand the Chinese influence behind it, he's also the one funding a lot of the pro-Palestinian and pro-Hamas violent protests in the United States. So he funds the Palestinian Youth Movement Group. He funds Students for Justice in Palestine. So when you saw a lot of those Palestinian flags at the so-called anti-ICE ride in LA, a lot of the keffiyehs, the neckerchief worn by the terrorists, the Hamas terrorists, that's not a coincidence. It's the same people that Roy Singham is paying to riot on behalf of his pro-Palestinian views as he is now paying to riot on behalf of his communist views, ostensibly the anti-ICE riots. This guy's now going to be investigated by Congress for funding this unrest in the United States because it is an anti-American endeavor. There's been document requests that he's been subject to from the House Oversight Committee. That would be, of course, Comer is the chair over there. Congresswoman Luna, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene have been on this. On the Senate side, Senator Josh Hawley is also investigating the Party for Socialism and Liberation and who exactly is funding them. It's not really a secret who's funding them, but this guy, Roy Singham, that's a name that we should learn. It should become a household name because this guy is one of the most influential figures in fomenting the violent aspects of the Democratic Party, which we've seen since probably 2015 was the start of that, through 2020 until now. This guy's behind it.
Liz, do we know anything about this guy's motivation? Everyone knows by now, like you said, we've been talking about George Soros for years. We know he's one of these God complex type people. He's admitted that about himself, that believes part of his role in life is to destroy America, all that other garbage. Singham, what's his deal?
Yeah, it's interesting, actually, when you look into the background of this guy. He was once asked a couple years ago by the New York Times whether he works directly for the Chinese Communist Party. And he had some flowery denial where he said, "I am not given direction by any government. I march to the beat of my own drum. I act based on my own values." Well, you look into this guy's background and you're like, yeah, you're acting according to your own values. Your values are communism, bro. His father was a communist. His father's Sri Lankan, by the way, a Sri Lankan immigrant. His mother was Cuban. But his father was active in the Cuban Revolution. He was pro-Castro. His son, Roy Singham's son, works for a Marxist think tank funded by Roy Singham. This guy was part of the League of Revolutionary Black Voters, which is a communist group. He was actually investigated back in the 1970s by the FBI for being a communist. I think it was in either in 2021 or 2023, Roy Singham wrote a tribute letter. We posted this on my social media. Anybody can go and find this. Or you can look at the episodes we did on the Liz Wheeler Show from last week. All the information's in there. He wrote a letter. It was a tribute to a communist, a Leninist actually, named General Baker. And he was praising this guy because this Leninist had said, we are going to topple the communists. We're going to come after communism. He is actually motivated by his own values. He wasn't lying when he said that, because he is just a communist ideologically. But also, interestingly, in that denial, he never denies that he's received money from the Chinese Communist Party. I think it's pretty obvious that he at least indirectly has received financial benefits from pushing the Chinese Communist Party's narrative, this sort of, we want civil unrest in the United States, we're anti-capitalist. Roy Singham's also married, interestingly. He got married in 2017 to Jody Evans. Jody Evans is the woman who co-founded Code Pink. So you know all those angry, naked feminists that march? I think we just saw them in France. That's her group. She's behind that. She says it's an anti-war group. She used to call out the Chinese Communist Party for their abuse of the Uyghurs. But coincidentally, after she married Roy Singham, this mouthpiece of the Chinese Communist Party, she changed her views, and now she's pro-Chinese Communist Party because... You know, that's how it works.
Of course. Yes, of course. Yeah, I don't know why all the feminists get naked. Nobody wants to see that. Okay, Liz, let's change gears here before I throw up. Let's talk about the kids. I have two sons, meatheads, teenagers, and I am blown away by how right-wing, not they are, everyone knows my kids are going to be that way. They're friends. The trends are unbelievable in this country that young people are rejecting the filth. They're finding God. It's wonderful. What happened?
Yeah. It is interesting to see. And didn't one of your sons just write you? I think you posted this on social media and I saw it on X. Like the most wonderful letter for Father's Day. I know you make a lot of jokes about yourself. You're self-deprecating about your kids. But I think that we all know the truth is that you're a pretty wonderful father leading your kids towards the truth. So in that letter is evidence of it. Pretty touching letter right there. If you haven't seen it, go check it out. You are right to observe that there's a difference in these Gen Zers. I guess your sons are probably Gen Alpha, right? Aren't they a little bit younger than Gen Z even?
I don't know. I can't keep track of it. I'm too old.
Too old. Well, ask them. They'll know. Grok it, for goodness sakes. There's a difference. This is why young people are turning away from evil, is because they actually recognize that it is evil. And what I mean by that is for so long, even our generation, millennials, right? We're given this camouflaged version of evil that didn't seem like evil. It just seemed like, oh, Democrats in charge of inner cities haven't done a very good job. Maybe Democrats don't actually have the best interests of Black people at heart. Maybe are they just stupid? Are they just corrupt? Are they just self-interested? Are they just out of touch? Are they elite? It wasn't as blatant of evil as we're seeing now. But young people are not stupid now. They look and they see the transgender ideology. Young men see that they're being told that they're inherently rapists because of their testosterone, that masculinity is toxic, that they are deprived of due process under the law. They're told that they're evil because they're white, and they recognize inherently, because inherent within us all is God. It's natural law. You can call it nature, you can call it divinity, whatever you want to call it. You know my opinion. I'm a practicing Catholic. I know it's God, but you can call it natural law if you want. We know that that's not true. We know evil when we see it. And when you acknowledge, when you see something that's evil, there's a wake-up moment that happens where you realize, well, wait a second. If there's evil, then there's also good. So what is good? And young people across the country, Jesse, have actually begun to investigate what is the source of good? What's the definition of good? What's the author of good? And it has led them not only to Christianity at large, it's led them to Catholicism, because they're finding that answer in the doctrine of the church. I've never seen anything like this in my lifetime. And it's weird because we almost have the blatant evil of the left to thank for opening the eyes of our youth to the good of Christ.
Yeah, would hardly be the first time in history, biblical and otherwise, that an overabundance of evil have led people to God. Liz, as always, thank you. All right, lighten the mood. Next. All right, it is time to lighten the mood, and... let's talk about Bob Menendez going to prison. U.S. Senator, well, I guess former U.S. Senator from New Jersey, Bob Menendez, had gold bars, Egyptian gold bars. Apparently, he had envelopes stuffed with cash, like some kind of Italian gangster, in the suit jacket pockets of his, I mean, just as corrupt as it gets. He gets sentenced to 11 years, and now officially he has begun his 11-year prison sentence. I have said many times before, and I believe it, that the United States government is the largest criminal enterprise on the planet now. After so many years of being filled up with these corrupt monsters, we have a government full of criminals that who commit criminal acts every single day. So when you hear one guy, Bob Menendez, going to prison, you think to yourself, okay, well, whatever, there's still a lot more. You're right. There's a lot more. But when there's one, let's celebrate a W. Put a smile on your face. A corrupt politician who used his position in the United States Senate to enrich himself is going to prison for his crimes. That's something to feel good about. That lightens my mood. Send Democrats to prison, the criminals anyway. All right. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.